Thank you, Hans Peter. Well, I was going to thank the organizers for inviting me. That seemed redundant. So I will thank Jerry for taking me as a student and teaching me lots of mathematics and giving me lots of advice, which puts me in a position where I'm able to give the talk this morning. So I was thinking I should tell some humorous anecdote about Jerry. So I was thinking of all the sort of stories I knew. And when I started to think about them more carefully, I realized that none of them are really about Jerry. They're all about when I was Jerry and somebody else, this thing happened. And in fact, they're all really embarrassing stories about Jerry's friends and students. So I decided that the really embarrassing thing about Jerry is his choice of friends and students. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to talk about separating invariants. So I'm going to, I'll start pretty general. So I have X as an affine variety. Over a field, yeah. So F can be any field, finite, C, whatever. And some of the things I'm going to say are relevant in characteristic zero and for C, and some of them are only relevant for the modular case. So the idea is, one of the reasons people want invariants is that they have a set of mathematical objects and they define some sort of equivalence relation on them. Two are equivalent if they're in the same orbit under some group action. And now you want to decide, if someone hands you two objects, are they equivalent objects? Well, the answer is take an invariant and evaluate them. If the one invariant evaluated on the two objects is different, then they're not equivalent. So, of course, we know that if all the invariants you can find do come out to be the same, it doesn't necessarily mean they are equivalent. But the idea behind separating invariants is you don't need to check every possible invariant. That you'd like to get by with as few invariants as possible to check. So maybe I'll start with an example. I should say G is any group acting on X. So G can be reductive or not, but doesn't have to be an algebraic group. Okay. Just any group acting on X. Whereas later on I'm going to assume for some of my theorems that it's a reductive group acting rationally. Let's start with an example. I'm going to start with a finite group acting. So I'm going to take G to be the subgroup generated by so I'll take the cyclic group where omega is a primitive nth root of unity. Let's say nth root of unity. And X is going to be V. It's going to be two copies of the field. So there's obvious action here. So what's the ring of invariants? Well, it's easy to see. I'm going to use this notation. OVG is the polynomial, is the ring generated by, so if I have two coordinates here, x to the m minus 1, y. So there's those m plus 1 invariants generate the full set of polynomial invariants. However, if you're just interested in the values, you don't need all these invariants. So the point is, if you look at the ratio of these two, x to the m minus 1, y over x to the m, this is y over x. So, um, if you want to know the values of all these invariants, you can get by with, if you want to know the value of this invariant at some point U, well, we're going to take I is less than M here. This is zero. If that first invariant vanishes at U, and if it doesn't vanish at U, then I can really divide by X. And so this is, if we can get this right, X to the M times X M minus 1 Y of U by X to the M of U to the I. If X to the M of U is not zero. Okay, so what this means is if we know the values of the three invariants, X to the M, X to the M minus 1, Y, Y to the M, at a point U, we can reconstruct the values of all these M plus 1 invariants. So we call these three invariants, we say these three invariants are separating set. Because if y, if I have a point where y is zero, then I can't, the other invariants don't tell me anything. Yeah, so I need this argument here that I think this is, yeah, I was looking at. Okay, so I want to make definition. So, let's see. It's sufficiently general. The subset S. Okay, I think this will be all right. Subset of invariant S is a separating set. G, if we have for all points, so if you take any pair of distinct points in X, what I want is that if I can separate these two points, f of u is different from f of v, by using some invariant, then I can separate it by using an element S. Okay. There's the definition. So this is so when I say it's separating, I'm saying it, the set S separates just as well as the full set of polynomial invariants. And of course, if we have an infinite group, then it will only separate up to closed orbits. But if we have a finite group acting regularly, then the closed orbits are all orbits, and so a separating set really does distinguish different orbits. And the advantage in, say, in this example is, instead of working with this somewhat messy ring, I'm reduced to working with those three functions which generate a hypersurface ring. So if I take the three functions, the polynomial ring on those three generators, it's just a hypersurface with a single relation. So the first theorem is, so this is, I'm not making any assumptions on the group yet. First theorem is that there exists a finite separating set. Consider the ideal J by F tensor 1 minus 1 tensor F . So this is an ideal in this ring. So this is an Noetherian ring, so there's some finite set of generators of this form. So there exists some finite set F1 to Fn such that J is generated by F1 tensor 1 minus 1 tensor F1, this finite collection. Okay, so now I want to prove, I claim that this set F1 through Fn is a separating set. So separating. So to see that, I need to take two points in X, so I take U and V in X. And I want them to be separable, so I take them with f of u different than f of v for some f invariant f. And then I look at one f tensor 1 minus 1 tensor f. That's in the ideal J, so I can write it as finite sum 1 to n hi fi tensor 1 minus 1 tensor fi. These hi's are in this ring. And now f of u, I'm going to hit myself. So I define a ring map. So we have a ring map from this tensor product. Pardon me? Well, that's what I'm going to do. So the ring map I'm about to define is evaluation. Yeah. Okay. Well, what you do is you take this map, F tensor H goes to F of U times H of V. And if you do that, you get 0 is F of U minus F of V, which is pi of F tensor 1 minus 1 tensor F. And this, if I plug that expression in, is the sum pi of hi of fi of u minus fi of v. Okay, so this sum is, this difference is non-zero, so one of these things is non-zero, so it separates. And I won't prove it, but if G is, so here's another theorem. So if, well, let's see, maybe I'll, if G is finite, well, I can state this in a lot of generality, but I think I'll be pretty restrictive here and say I have a representation of a finite group. So G is sitting inside this representation, the GLV, acting linearly, then there exists a separating set finite separating set S with the property that the degree of F is less than or equal to the order of the group for all F in S. And the proof of this is constructive. You write down the polynomial, you look at its coefficients, and you get this finite set of, so you can actually, in the finite group case, you can just write out this algorithm which gives you this finite set of generators. Yeah, this is all independent of characteristic. Yeah, so in fact, right, oh, maybe so. Well, right, okay, so yeah. So, of course, in the characteristic zero case, there's a generating set with the property that every element of the generating set has degree at most the order of the group. That works in the, in fact, that works in characteristic zero, and as Jim mentioned, yesterday, this also works in the non-modular case due to Fleischmann and Fogarty, so independently. But in the non-modular case, there is no bound independent of V. But for separating algebras, we have this nice bound and this constructive way of getting these elements. So now, what is the relationship between these separating sets and that full ring of invariants? So and just a couple definitions. So I'm going to take a domain. Let's do this. I'll take A sitting inside X. Well, this is not, A tilde is the normalization of A. Of course, the integral closure in its field of fractions. And the new thing I want to talk about is A hat, which is an overring such that there exists some k with f to the p to the k in A. Okay, so anything which when I raise it to the pth power enough times comes down to A, those set of those things is A hat. So this is a ring. Ah! It's important. So this is if the characteristic of f is P, which is bigger than zero, and in order to handle the other cases, it's A again, if the characteristic is zero. So in characteristic P, in characteristic zero, I'm just going to use the normalization, but in characteristic P, I need this extra step, which is to throw in this ring, and this is called the inseparable closure. This is the inseparable closure of A. And so Gregor Kemper proved if A is a separating subalgebra. Then, okay, now I can never remember this. I have to look this up. Okay, so then A tilde hat is the ring of invariance. Well, Greger was actually trying to compute. Greger was writing an algorithm to find rings of invariance. And he first constructs with his computer system separating subalgebra, and then he wants to get from that to the full ring of invariance. And so he just wanted a tilde. No. So maybe I should say reductive. It's yeah, so I think you're right. So I want to say reductive. G is reductive here. Yeah, so, I mean, there are versions of this that are true. I can start weakening the axioms in all sorts of different ways and start saying, okay, if this is finitely generated ring, or... yeah, so here... And G is reductive. Because in characteristic P, so some power of it is an invariant. That means that there's a pth root of unity. It's acting, it's a character, it's a pth root of unity, and only pth root of unity is 1. So G is reductive, acting regularly on X. Okay. And when I was, so, later part of my talk, I'm going to start talking about some work that joint work that I did with Greger and Jan Drasma. When I was doing that, Greger came to Kingston, we were working on it, I continually asked him, is it A tilde hat or A hat tilde? repeatedly. So I have a graduate student, Emily Dufresne, is working on these questions for her PhD, and this is one of the big advantages of having a grad student, because Emily proved that A tilde hat is A hat tilde. And not, I don't need separating, I need, but this is a property of normal Noetherian domain. Not normal, a Noetherian domain. So that you can, so this is good because I still can't remember, but it doesn't matter anymore. No, it doesn't have to be. I don't think I'm assuming that. Of course, in all my applications, it is. That the question was, is there an assumption built in here that A is finitely generated? For... Of the ring of... Yeah.
Is it true that A hat is a subset of A tilde? I mean, every element is just...
There's something missing here. This is in a bigger, these F's are in the original poem, whereas the normalization just comes from the field of fractions. Yeah. In fact, I should maybe, what Emily actually proved is, let me... No, the hat and the tilde, I mean, when you form the hat and the tilde, you have to have the sitting. I've got this A sitting here. So let me formulate exactly what this statement is. This might help. So I have A a domain, and K is the quotient field of A. And I have some field extension, some finite field extension. That, and E is defined to be, so I look the inseparable closure of A in of K in L. Then these two A tilde hat, which is A hat tilde, because they're both equal to the integral closure of A in E. Okay, and so the L I'm taking is the functions on X, the field of functions on X. So I want to discuss some questions that might arise having got this far. So here are some questions. So having fooled around with this for a while, we discovered that whenever we wanted to construct a separable subalgebra, we could always get a hypersurface. So the question was, is there always? Does there always exist? This is now, I'm not assuming she has any characteristic in the group acting regularly. Does there always exist a hypersurface subalgebra? Separating subalgebra. And then the second question is the same thing. Does there always exist? Except that instead of saying a hypersurface, I want to say complete intersection. Separating subalgebra. Okay, well, the third one, which is only relevant in characteristic P, is the same question, but I want to say Cohen Macaulay here. And as we saw with that first example, which I just erased, sometimes there is not a polynomial. There are examples where there are no polynomial separating subalgebras, which is not surprising. But the question is, if it does have a polynomial separating subalgebra, what would that mean? So if A polynomial and separating, what? What can you say about the ring of invariance if it has a polynomial subalgebra which separates? So this last question is only relevant in characteristic P, because if you're in characteristic 0, well, we can answer it in characteristic 0. If this is a polynomial ring and it separates, then when I compute A tilde, I get A. And in the characteristic 0, A tilde hat is still A. So that means that these two things are equal. So if in characteristic zero, the answer to this question is that the ring of invariance is polynomial. And so the group is generated by reflection. I'll come back to this maybe, see what we can say in characteristic P. So I'll give an answer to the first question now. You're right. Yeah. So I guess I'm right. Right. The question was, when I said was under the assumption that X was a vector space. So I was looking at so if I have a representation and the ring invariance is polynomial, so that's what I need to see it as generated by reflections. Okay. So here's some answers. The first answer is no, and this is due to Harm Dirksen. So this is sort of a nice example, so I thought I'd present it. So I'm going to take the group G, which is going to be C star, and inside GL, the five-dimensional representation given by weights 1, 1, 1, minus 1, and minus 1. And I'm going to give these coordinates x1, x2, and x3 for the positive weights, and y1 and y2 for the two negative weights. Then it's easy to see that the ring of invariance is given by these X, Y, Y, J. And so the question was, so this has got six generators, and the ring of variance is four-dimensional. So can you get by with less than the five functions instead of these six generators to separate? So the answer is no. So we assume that we can find five functions. We have a set F consisting of five functions which separate. And of course, if we add those five, they would generate either a polynomial ring or a hypersurface. So we're going to show that you can't find five. So suppose you have five. So you want to write them each as polynomials in these, so there's six of these generators, x, y, y, j. So I'm going to write each fi as a polynomial, say, capital fi in x1, y1, x1, y2, x1, y3, x2, y1, x1, y2, x2, y2, and x3. Y2. These FIs are just polynomials. Six indeterminates. And then we consider the five equations FI evaluated at Z1, Z2, Z3, 0, 0, 0, minus FI of 0, 0, 0, Z4, Z5, Z6. So I have five polynomial equations on this affine six-dimensional complex vector space. And, of course, if I plug 0, 0, 0 in for all six variables, I get the origin satisfies all these five equations. So these five equations generate a proper ideal. And so, but that proper ideal has height at most 5. So there's an infinite number of solutions. So there's infinitely many solutions inside six-dimensional space to these things. So pick a solution. A1, A2, up to A6 to these five equations, non-zero, A not zero, and I want to define 2 points. U is going to be A1, A2, A3, 1, 0. And another point, B, A4, A5, A6, 0, 1. So these are in V. And I'm going to show they can't be separated by these five functions. So if I evaluate Fi at U, well, how do I do that? I need to plug these coordinates in to these products here. So the first product is x1, y1. So if you do that, you get a1, a2, a3. Oops, this is path of 0, 0, 0. And so this is equal to f of fi. This is equal to, by construction of these a's, a4, a5, a6, 0, 0, 0, 4, a5, a6, and that's fi evaluated at b. So these five functions don't separate these 2 points. However, the invariants do. One of these numbers, say A1, is different from 0. So there's an invariant, X1, Y1. Its value would be A1 here, and its value would be 0 here. So whatever five functions you write down, they can't separate as well as the six generating invariants, so there's no hypersurface. So the answer is no, not yet. So I have to modify the question now to say, if the order of G is finite, and now I don't know the answer. This last question I want to look at. That's the what I know about the first question. I know essentially nothing about questions 2 and 3. Question 4, some people had worked on, and the point is, if you try to construct, so this is only relevant in positive characteristic, and I'm going to assume my X is a representation space. If you try to construct, it's not true, so in characteristic 0, these two things, if this is polynomial, these have to be equal. That's not true in characteristic P. You can pretty easily construct examples where A is polynomial and properly contained in the ring of invariants. But when you do that, the way to do it is to start with a polynomial ring of invariants. So what you do is you start with a polynomial ring of invariants and you replace some of the generators with P powers. Then you still, that gives you a subring which is polynomial, and it still separates. It's not hard to see that it still separates. And so, but the question, the answer still is that this is still polynomial. So I think the feeling was that if A is polynomial, then the ring of invariants is polynomial. And about a month ago, Emily constructed two infinite families of counterexamples. So she found some hypersurface rings of invariants which contained polynomial separating subalgebras to frame. And she's in the audience. Yes. Okay. Yeah, so I could write Emily's name down, that might be. Yeah, so Emily's working on this for her PhD, so if you have some ideas, you shouldn't follow them too far. You should just tell me all the ideas. Yeah, come into that.
Good question.
So what I'm going to talk about now is the joint work I did with Jan Drasma. Very Kemper. And so we were, so we had these suffering invariants, and they enjoyed a number of sort of nice properties. And Rigger said, what can we do? And so the idea was, well, here's a big important theorem is Weyl's theorem, polarization theorem. So maybe we could see what that says about separating in this situation. So Weyl's theorem says, I have to formulate this. So I'm going to take a subgroup, and I'm in characteristic zero now, and M is some number. Well, again, there are lots of ways to formulate this. I'm going to formulate it sort of in the simplest way to write down, but it can be improved. So if a set F is a generating set, or the ring of invariants on one copy, then when I polarize, and I use this notation for polarizing from one copy up to M copies, so I take all the polarizations. So I take this set F, I take everything in it, and I polarize it from one copy of V to M copies of V. Weyl's theorem tells you you get a generating set. Oh, N. Thank you. So this needs to be like that. I'm getting ahead of myself. Generating set for O, this thing. Okay, so the question was, what could we do in the separating algebras? And what we can do is, well, we want characteristic zero. We don't need that. We don't want that. And we want to change this word to separating, and this word to separating. I guess I should do that. So this is the theorem that we can prove. So if you start with a separating set which separates on n copies and you polarize them all, you get a set which separates for m copies. So I'm assuming that G is a reductive subgroup of GLV. I should actually mention, so Weyl's theorem doesn't work in positive characteristics. It doesn't even work. Even if you have a non-modular group, when you polarize, you don't necessarily get a set of generators. And Friedrich Knop has a sort of weakened statement of Weyl's theorem, which does work in the non-modular case for generators, for finite groups, yeah. Yeah, so this is not, I'm not assuming the group is finite here. Friedrich does. Okay, so, okay, well, so we also introduced a new thing, which we call cheap polarization. I guess the original motivation for calling it cheap was that computationally it may be easier to do. And I think maybe the best thing to do, instead of going through all the definition of polarization and then cheap polarization, is just to give an example of cheap polarization. So So I'm going to, I'll polarize. So I'm going to polarize cheaply from one copy to three copies. So first thing about cheap polarization is it starts with one copy and polarizes to many copies. So I'm going to polarize x squared. One copy to two copies x squared. So if I was going to do this regularly, I would introduce three variables, x1, x2, x3, and look at the tri-grading and look at the homogeneous pieces. But what I'm going to do instead is look at x1 plus ax2. And now if I was doing regular polarization, I'd put a bx3 here. I'm going to write a squared x3. So I'm going to use the same variables twice, and I'll separate things by taking different powers. And I square this. So if I expand this out, x1 squared, a times x1, x2, 2x1, x2, 2x1, okay, now there's no chance I can do this on the board, so I'm not making a mistake. So. Plus a squared times 2x1, x3, plus x2 squared, a cubed times 2x2, x3, plus a to the 4th times x3. So the cheap polarization from three copies of x squared is these coefficients, x1 squared, 2x1, x2, 2x1, x2 plus x2 squared, 2x2, x3, x3 squared. Thank you. So the difference is, in cheap polarization, you get this sum of two things, and it's not multi-homogeneous, but you get by, in this case, I get by with 5 invariants instead of 6. So, okay, what's that? Why is that interesting? So the reason is, the following theorem. So now I'm going to talk about, so cheap polarization is useful for finite groups. I don't know if it has any applications for infinite groups. So the theorem we proved was, so you have a finite group, and either one of the following two hypotheses holds, either S is a generating set, or else your field is big, strictly bigger than and S separates. So I start with one copy of V, and I start either with a generating set or with separating set if my field is big. And the conclusion is that the cheap polarization of S separates. So you only need one copy for any finite group. And in particular, this tells you, So Jim was talking briefly about Noether numbers yesterday, degree of the highest invariant you need in a generating set. So we call that beta. So I have a similar thing called beta sep, which is the degree of the highest element you need to get a separating set. And so beta sep of m copies of v is always less than or equal to the regular Noether number on one copy. And of course, in contrast, well, if p is positive, then the regular Noether number goes off to infinity. But even in characteristic zero, this gives some new results. You can find groups, finite groups, where the invariants on one copy are generated in low degrees, and when you start to add some more copies, you need to go up into higher degrees for generators. The theorem tells you that if you're only interested in separating invariants, you don't need to. Yeah. Right over here. Okay, so I have 6 minutes left. I'll try to answer the question the reader just asked a minute ago about counting how many do you need. So I want to introduce a set of beta, which measures the degree of my elements of my separating subset or elements of my generating set. I'll introduce gamma, which counts how many there are. So gamma of V is the minimal number T such that there exists a generating set of the random invariants of size T. And gamma sep of V is the minimum T. There exists a separating set of size T. And then it turns out to be useful to introduce another, one more symbol here, gamma sep multi of V. So this is the minimal T such that there exists a separating set of multi-homogeneous elements which separate. So I need a multi-grading on V to make to make sense of this. So if I have a multi-grading on V, which then I can ask this. So maybe I should go back to the example. This set here is not, I have this tri-grading on the three copies. B, this particular invariant here is not multi-homogeneous in that tri-grading. And so the gamma separating multi of that example will be 6, whereas the actual count of separating would be 5. So that's the difference. That's right. So, in fact, well, they don't have to be homogeneous. When I generate them by polarization, they are homogeneous. But if I use T polarization, they're still homogeneous, but they're not multi-homogeneous. So I don't know of any advantage to making them non-homogeneous, but I do know an advantage of making them not multi-homogeneous, which this example shows. So the question is, what can you say about these numbers? So the theorem I want to enunciate is so if you ask for a multi-homogeneous on m copies of V, The answer is that it's at least m plus 1 choose 2. But of course, a generating set, the usual classical generating set, is a multi-homogeneous set of separating invariants. So in particular, it's, if you want to know how many generators you actually need, you need at least m plus 1 choose 2. On the other hand, if I use this theorem here, you can count how does the cheap polarization generate new invariants, and it generates quite a bit fewer of them. So the theorem says that how many do you need just to separate? It's less than or equal to the number of copies times this constant. Yeah, this is finite groups. So if you... Here? Or here? So the number...
What about if V is 0?
What about if V is 0? I think I'm assuming that G is non-trivial and acts faithfully. I can't think of where I'm using that, but... So the point is, if you want to find a separating set, this theorem says that the number, when you add more and more copies of V, you only need the number of number of invariants grows linearly in the number of copies. Yeah. So, if you just want a separating set, you can get this linear. You can use this theorem and cheap polarization to construct a set of separating invariants, the number of which grows linearly in the number of copies m. But if you want generators, you get this bound, and if g isn't zero and acts faithfully, this is actually sharp because you can easily write down an action of z mod 2z which requires m plus 1 choose 2 generators. So I'll stop there.